Good evening. On behalf of the Kollel, on behalf of the Rosh Kollel, who has a family simcha this evening, I wanted to say firstly a Bruchim Abayim to Rav Heinemann, who this is our second time that we're zeichet to have Rav Heinemann here at the Kollel for our annual Star K lecture. Rabbi Heinemann needs no introduction, nor am I the one to introduce him. I just wanted, on behalf of the Kollel, to thank the Rav for coming. It's a very long trip there and back. You should have a safe trip back as well. And the Rav was very well received last time, and Bez Hashem this time as well. The Kollel is very happy to take part in joining together with Ezel Chinuch for this event. Ezel Chinuch is a very, very wonderful organization, as I'm sure you all know. And we do want to thank Dr. Danny Eisenberg and his whole family, and Dr. Diamond and his family for the tremendous work that they've done and they continue to do. And we're very happy to join them together. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gary Diamond to say a couple words about Ezel Chinuch.
Koshav Rabbanim, Rabosai, friends, I'll be very brief indeed. On behalf of the Board of Directors, I would like to sincerely thank you all for your support of Ezel Chinuch, which you have publicly expressed by coming here this evening for our second yearly all-community fundraiser. Your presence here implies that you too share our belief that providing a Torah education for all our children is an ongoing, community-wide, intergenerational responsibility. It's negayah now to give a chorus of tov to the Rabbono Shel Olam for his infinite chesed in giving our community the resources necessary to provide a Torah education for all of our children. To Rav Shalom Kamenetsky, Shlita Rosh Yeshiva of our Yeshiva of Philadelphia, for his continuing input and his support of Ezel Chinuch as its rabbinic supervisor. To the Philadelphia Community Kollel, for Rav Yechiel Bieberfeld, Rabbi Yoel David Zeffrin, for providing the facilities and dedicating this evening's proceeds to Ezel Chinuch, truly yashar koach. To our Board of Directors, all volunteers, all heavily laden with community obligations, who nevertheless are Mesiras Nefesh on behalf of our children. To our volunteer staff for this evening's event, including the Friedman and Spiller families, for their ongoing Mesiras Nefesh and attention to detail, yashar koach to you as well. To the Friedman, Rosenblum, Elman families for choosing to memorialize the Neshama of Sarach Dina Bashalom David Alaya Shalom, and the Brachman family for choosing to memorialize the Neshama of Lazarus Brachman Alava Shalom through Ezel Chinuch, their Neshama should have an Aliyah. To Dr. Danny Eisenberg, my friend and Ms. Palel, whose fertile intellect sparked the creation of this organization 2 years ago. Danny, I can only say in the words of David HaMelech in Tehillim, Orech Yemim Asbiehu, Garehu B'Yeshua Si. To the Levy, Senior, Eisenberg, Tanner, and Weiss families for providing Ezel Chinuch donor cards in place of elaborate centerpieces for their family simchas, yashar koach to you. And the MS, you should all be good kibenched by the Rabbono Shel Olam, for you are Ezel Chinuch. We wish you a chag kasher v'sameach. And now, Danny Eisenberg to introduce our speaker.
Well, Gary has stolen a little bit of my thunder. On behalf of Ezel Chinuch and the Philadelphia Community Kollel, I'd like to welcome Rabbi Heinemann to Philadelphia. When I first approached Rishmul Kamenetsky with the concept of the as-yet-unnamed Ezel Chinuch, I was greeted with encouragement and support. As Rishmul mentioned at last year's Ezel Chinuch lecture, we're doing a great mitzvah by supporting families who cannot afford even minimum tuition for Jewish day schools. The scholarship process is never pleasant, but for some, it was particularly bad. Now, those who need help, who need the most help, can feel that there's somewhere to turn. Rishmul could not be here tonight because he's actually returning from Mexico, I think at this very moment. But as you can see from his name on the sponsor list, he stands with us this evening. Just a short personal note, I'm particularly happy to have Rav Heinemann with us this evening. While I've never lived in Baltimore, my uncle was the president of Rabbi Heinemann's shul for several years. As a result, while he may not realize it, Rabbi Heinemann has been party to many of the major decisions in my life. It was with Rabbi Heinemann that I discussed issues of gross anatomy before beginning medical school in 1988. I again met with Rabbi Heinemann in 1991 to discuss Shomer Shabbos residencies, kashrus issues, issues regarding naming of my oldest son, and even issues of getting married were all discussed with Rabbi Heinemann. By way of introduction, I think the easiest and the best way would be to tell you the way the Star K website describes Rabbi Heinemann. Rabbi Heitman was uprooted from his birthplace in Germany after Kristallnacht and emigrated first to England and then to the United States. Upon settling in New York City with his family in 1949, he enrolled in Torah Vadas, where he became a student of Rav Avraham Pam Zatzal. In 1954, Rabbi Heitman was one of 58 students learning in Lakewood. As you can see, we've come a long way from 58, I guess. He had a close relationship with his mentor, Rav Aaron Cutler Zatzal. When Rav Aaron passed away in 1962, Rabbi Heitman studied with his son, Rav Shneur Cutler Zatzal. Rabbi Heitman received a smicha in 1964 from Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. An invitation to join the rabbinic staff at Yeshiva Neir Israel brought Rabbi Heitman to Baltimore in 1967. During his tenure at Neir Israel, he also received smicha from Rav Yitzhak Ruderman Zatzal. Several years later, Rabbi Heitman began giving a popular class in Jewish law, which continues to this day. Given the breadth and depth of material covered by the Rav, members of the Baltimore community came to recognize and appreciate the greatness in their midst. Rabbi Heitman's encyclopedic knowledge of the practical application of Jewish law to contemporary issues, such as kashrus, medical ethics, and business law, earned him a reputation as a posek throughout the entire country and abroad. Furthermore, Rabbi Heitman's mastery of both the complex world of modern technology and the intricacies of Jewish law made him an ideal candidate to serve as rabbinic administrator of the newly revitalized Star K. In 1971, Rabbi Heitman assumed that position. When the Agudas Yisrael in Baltimore established its own shul in 1981, Rabbi Heitman was chosen to serve the congregation. Without any further introduction, I am honored to present Rav Moshe Heitman.
I have a little bit of a problem. I spoke here a few years ago. I don't remember what I said a few years ago. And I might be saying the same thing again as I said last time. Hopefully I'm not going to say differently than I said last time. But I figured if I don't remember what I said, how can I expect you to remember what I said? So therefore, I'm pretty safe ground. Pesach is the time, Zman Chayruseinu, is the time of our freedom. There are many specific mitzvahs to, for Pesach. There are mitzvahs what we should do, and mitzvahs what we should not do. But besides all that, it is a yontif. And yontif, there's a mitzvah of being happy on yontif. There was a question about sugar. Today there's no problem with regular sugar. But there used to be a problem with sugar. They used to have cube sugar and they used to, and regular sugar. They used to put flour into it because sugar was very expensive 200 years ago. And it didn't grow in any of the northern European countries, so they had to bring it from the southern countries, and it was expensive to transport it. It was very expensive, so they used to put in flour to make it more. In other words, you put in 3 pounds of sugar and 2 pounds of flour, you got 5 pounds of sugar, and it was a problem. The cube sugar didn't have that problem because it wouldn't stick together properly, a cube, if it wasn't completely sugar. So the custom was that people on Pesach only ate not the granulated sugar, just the cube sugar. But there were some people who were worried about the cube sugar also. Just because sugar could have flour in it, so even though there really wasn't any over there, but they want to be extra careful. So the Chacham Tzvi said that these people are not doing a mitzvah by taking the more stringent attitude towards this sugar. Because if the whole yontif, they're not going to use any sugar, how are they going to fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif? And without sugar, everything's going to, they don't have any splendor or anything else like that. It was either with sugar or it didn't taste sweet. So therefore, he said that this is not a chumrah, a stringency. This is a leniency. That there's a mitzvah of being happy on Yom Tov, and you're taking the wrong course. His son, Rav Yaakov Emden, said the same thing about people. You know, some people have a custom on Pesach. Everyone eats matzah.
that is something which is agreed upon by all different types of Jews, whether Sfarad, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, or Sangam, but some people have a they don't eat matzah that has come in contact with water. In other words, they would never put matzah into, they wouldn't eat any matzah knedlach in the soup because it comes in contact with water. And what they're really worried about is that maybe when they made the matzah, they did not really knead the dough well, and there was some unkneaded flour in the dough. So when you put it in the oven, it never got baked because it never was mixed. And now, when you take this flour and you put it when you put it into water or in the soup or whatever it is, it's going to become hummus. So there's some people, that's called gebracht. Some people don't eat that. So his son, actually, it is not really such a problem at all, because even if it is true that it was not mixed with water, if you take flour and you put it into the oven, it cannot become hummus anymore. It can only become, because there's an enzyme in it that gets killed, that causes it to rise. It gets killed when you put it into the oven, and it cannot become hummus. Theoretically, a matzah could be up to a tefach thick, 3.5 inches thick. It doesn't have to be the cracker type matzah that we have. And in those matzahs, maybe it's possible that you could have this problem. But somewhere in the middle of the, it was soft. It was like it wasn't the type that we have. It was like a cake or bread, like challis. That's how it looked. Which would be kosher. If it's all done within 18 minutes, it would be fine. There, maybe in the middle, it didn't get that hot, maybe, and maybe it's possible to think about. By us, it's really not possible. So Rabbi Yaakov said that those people who do not eat gebracht, with our matzahs, our thin matzahs, they think that it's a stringency. He said, no, it's a leniency, because they don't really have the full mitzvah of being happy on Yom Tov. How can you be happy on Yom Tov if you don't eat knedlach in your soup? So the Shulchan Aruch actually devotes a chapter on being happy on Yom Tov, which is how you're supposed to be happy on Yom Tov. The men are happy with meat and wine. The women are happy with new clothes and jewelry. The Mishnah Berurah says that if a person can't afford new clothes for his wife, he said at least he should buy her new shoes for Yom Tov. The children, how do you make them happy? You make them happy with popcorn. We can eat popcorn on we don't eat corn on the oven. It's things have been made crisp in the oven, and with candy, with nuts. Now today's children are not going to be happy with that. You got to buy them an electronic toy or something else like that. But this one says in Shulchan Aruch. So since I'm speaking about preparing for Pesach, so this is something you have to prepare for Pesach before. You want to get your wife a new dress, you're not going to go and buy it. You know, give her $200 and she should buy herself a new dress, buy herself some jewelry. That's how you prepare for Pesach. There's also a custom in Klal Yisrael that before Pesach, they have a charity collection for people that don't have enough funds to make a proper Pesach, called Moaz Chitin, which literally translated as money for wheat, from which to make matzahs. But it's not just for matzahs, for anything that they would need, that they don't have proper clothing, they don't, whatever they need, that they should be able to buy it. There's a famous story with Reb Chaim Brisker. Someone came Oh, the Beis HaLevi, his father. So it was the Beis HaLevi. Someone came and asked him, so you're supposed to drink 4 cups of wine at the Seder. So, now, you know, for Kiddush, some people use whiskey. Actually, you could use beer for Kiddush on a regular Shabbos. It doesn't have to be actually wine. If it's things that people drink, in the place of wine, Chamal Medina, it is also kosher. So someone came and asked the Beis HaLevi if you're allowed to use milk for the 4 cups of wine at the Seder. So the Beis HaLevi said, Beis HaLevi lived about 150 years ago. He said, no, you cannot use it, but if it's a question of money, he said he gave him $500 to buy himself some wine. So the family asked him after the person left, he said, what do you mean $500 for? You know, 4 cups of wine, you can, it doesn't cost $500, so you give him $20, you can get many cups of wine with that. So he said, look, if he asked me if he can use milk for the 4 cups, evidently he's not going to eat meat at the Seder. So he doesn't have any meat either. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't have a decent meal. So therefore, if I give him $500, they'll be able to celebrate the Yom Tov in the proper way. On Pesach, as we all know, chametz is forbidden. You're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to derive benefit from it. And you're not allowed to have it. We're not allowed to have it in our possession. Now, everyone knows that. Where actually is it the most likely place that if we would have a problem with chametz, that we would come in contact with chametz? Actually, if there's going to be a chametz problem, the most likely place, the righteous women, they clean out the whole house before Pesach. It's guaranteed that there's no chametz in the whole house. Everything that you buy for Pesach is kosher for Pesach, even the water. Everything. I'm not talking on the water in the faucet, I'm on the bottled water. Not that you need it, but everything's kosher for Pesach. So where would a person actually come in contact with a problem of chametz? If there's going to be a problem, the most likely problem is with the matzah. Because when you make these matzahs, you have to make sure from the time that you made the dough until the time that it goes in the oven is all done in 18 minutes. And especially if you have hand matzahs, that there may be a problem with the matzahs. One should be careful to, even though they're kosher Pesach, but hand matzahs are made by hand, machine matzahs are made by a machine. There's an element of human error that is possible to happen with these hand matzahs. Now you should look at them before Pesach, because sometimes the matzah has been doubled over, either in the oven or by the person who was rolling the dough. They may be doubled over, and if it's still doubled over, then it's twice as thick in that place, and it won't be baked properly. And if that happens, there is a chash over here. There's a reason to be concerned that maybe it is chametz. Now, let me explain that there's two types. This is called a matzah kfula, bent over matzah. There's two types. One, now, this is very common, by the way, if you use hand matzahs. If you use machine matzahs, not common. You don't have to check them over before. If you use hand matzahs by the Seder or the whole Pesach, what happens is like this, that sometimes it's bent over. When the matzah is put into the oven, it's a piece of dough. Sometimes when it's put into the oven, like the matzah In the middle, it'll be double. Actually, it's triple, because like a Z, the matzah goes like that into the oven. Or maybe around the edge of it, it's going to be bent over when it's put in. They're flabby when they're put into the oven. It's put in by hand. So if it is actually doubled over, not only do you have to make sure to break off that part of the matzah, but you have to actually take an inch further into the matzah off, because this is all connected to the matzah. You take off another inch from the place where it has been doubled over, and then you could eat the rest of the matzah. Sometimes it is bent over while they are rolling it, and since they've rolled it, they roll it to the same thickness as the rest of the matzah. And especially if sometimes they roll it, and they get a hole. The matzahs are thin. They get a hole in the matzah. So what they do, they take the matzah and they pull it over the hole, and then they roll it again. Now, actually, you can see when you take a look at the matzah, there's look like a slit in the top of the matzah. It doesn't necessarily go over the whole matzah. It goes over part of it. And then on the other side, you'll see a slit on the other side. It's not exactly in the same place. It'll be a little further away. So the area between these two, if it is the same thickness as the rest of the matzah, you just break out that part and the rest of it you can eat. It's not really chametz, it's just a minhag not to use that, a custom not to use it. And then you can actually take it out on Pesach, when you could, you know, you want to have a complete matzah, shlemim, in order to, for the Lecha Mishnah, you could use it the way it is. And then before you eat it, you break out this part and put it away. And whatever you break, if on Pesach you recognize that the matzah is chametz, and you break off part of that matzah which is chametz, what are you supposed to do with it? You're supposed to burn it? Yes, but let's say it's on Chol Hamoed. Are you supposed to burn it? You're not allowed to burn it. As a matter of fact, if you find chametz in your house on Pesach, you're not allowed to burn it. On Chol Hamoed, you're not allowed to burn it. Why not? Because it's not yours. You sold your chametz to the guy. It belongs to the guy. You can't burn up someone else's chametz. You have no right to do that. So the din in Shulchan Aruch that says if you find on Pesach you're supposed to cover it, and then on Chol Hamoed you're supposed to burn it, is talking to someone who didn't sell his chametz to a guy. But anyone who sold his chametz to a guy is not his, so he has no right to burn it. Now, for the Seder, one should use Shmura Matzah. When I say for the Seder, that means we have to make the Bracha Moitzi Lech B'Doretz and our Achilles Matzah. So the Matzah you eat after that should be Shmura Matzah. The Matzah for the Korach with the Mora in between should be Shmura Matzah. And the Matzah for Afikoma should be Shmura Matzah. If you eat other Matzah during the Seder, during the meal, it doesn't have to be Shmura. Some people have a custom to eat Shmura the whole Pesach. It's an expensive custom. If they want to do that, I mean, but it's not really required, only those parts of matzah that I mentioned before. If you have matzahs from last year, you bought matzahs last year, especially if you bought it at the end of Pesach when they made a sale and you got it at half price or a quarter of the price. If they were kosher Pesach last year and you have them, you put them in a place where you know that no chametz got to it, or it's completely wrapped in cellophane, whatever, you can use them this year also. If it was kosher Pesach last year, it's going to be kosher Pesach this year too. Whether you can use it for matzah or not, that is, if the matzahs are in good shape, you can use them for matzah. You can use them to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. But if it's they're moldy, even though they're still kashlo Pesach, but you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. It has to be something which regular people would eat. Matzahs don't usually get moldy because it's not like bread. Because bread is moist inside. Matzahs usually are dry, and so therefore they don't get moldy. And that's why if someone makes an eruv, so then they use matzahs to make the eruv, because they will last a whole year and it won't get moldy, because the bread, if they use bread and it gets moldy, it's not kosher anymore. When you buy new things for Pesach, new cutlery, pots and pans, baking dishes, or whatever, it's somehow, I don't know why this is, but we have a mikveh in Baltimore where you put new vessels in when you buy it from a non-Jew. So you something that was in the it was the possession of a non-Jew. If you buy it, you have to put it into mikveh before you use it. Has to be a kosher mikveh. Now we have a mikveh in Baltimore. It's a drive-in mikveh. You don't. It's not inside of a building, so it's available for 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. I mean, it's open on Shabbos too, but you can't tell on Shabbos. When it comes before Pesach, and like in the 4 weeks before Pesach, the people are just lining up to use it, and it's till 3 o'clock in the morning that people are using it. It's interesting. All kinds of people come and use this mikveh. People who you would think not even don't keep any mitzvahs. I was once over there, and a woman is standing next to the mikveh with a pot in her hand, and I say to her, "Can I help you?" She says, "Yes." I said, "I've heard about this concept of purifying vessels, but I don't know exactly how you're supposed to do this." So I asked her where she lives. So she lived in some village near Baltimore, not a Jewish place, but evidently she was Jewish. And I told her how to do it. And I said, "You may want to learn a little bit more about these things." So she said, "Yes." And so I put in contact with the Eitz Chaim. It's a organization that deals with people that want to know more about Jewish concepts. And 2 years later, she was a Shomer Shabbos. She moved out of the place, and she moved into, and they moved into Baltimore. They just, a lot of people just don't know anything. So anyway, but there's all kinds of people that use this mikveh all the way into the wee hours of the morning. Now, it's one thing they have to know, that over in New York, there are places that sell these things, and they have mikveh in the store. And you just, when you want to buy something, they will tell it right there and then for you. You have to be very careful when you do that, that let's say you buy a pot, so he'll take a pot out of the box, the guy sells it to, put it into the mikveh and give it to you. It's not good. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah of tolling if they did that. Because, let's say, when you go and you buy wine, let's say Kedem wine. Kedem wine is kosher. Does Mr. Kedem, does he toggle the bottle before he puts in the wine? No, he does not. So how does he do that? Because the only thing that you have to toggle is vessels which are used for eating. But for Mr. Kedem, this vessel is not something he uses for eating. This is something he uses for business. And therefore, it's not clay seuda, and it doesn't require tefillah. Now, if you get the bottle, and you take out the wine from it, and now you want to use it for your own purposes, to use it a meal, so then you may have to tell them at that point. So when the people who own the store, this pot is not something that you eat with. This is something you do business with. You sell it. So it's not considered clay suda yet. So what you have to do is that when the when he comes, when you say, "Let me see it," you pick it up, have intention to acquire it, and then give it back to him and let him tovel it. Because of that, when you have it, for you, it's only used for eating purposes. So then if he tovels it, he can tovel it for you. It doesn't matter who tovels it, and then it'll be kosher. They just have a mind to do their job.
Later, they require to purchase it for free.
Yes, you pay for it, and then you pick it up, and then you tow. Now, parts that come from are not made in the United States. Today, most of them are either made in Korea or China or somewhere else. Very few things made in the United States anymore. You have to kasher them before you tow them, because especially in the spun aluminum or spun steel. So if you look at the bottom and you see a lot of circles, each circle is less than a millimeter apart from the next one. The whole thing is full of circles, either on one side or on the other side. They, in order to do that, spun steel or spun aluminum, they have to use a lubricant. And that lubricant is very often made from animal fat. In the United States, they don't use animal fat, they use petroleum. But it's made out of the country, there's no way that you can guarantee that it's kosher. Added to that, if you buy Farberware, even if it's made in the United States, which I don't believe it is anymore, but the Farberware has a polish on the outside, which is also made with animal fat, and therefore you have to kasher them even if they're made in the United States. Now, if you didn't know this and you've been using your parts already for 5 years, you don't have to kasher it anymore. It's already kashered itself by the fact that you've already eaten up all the trafers in it, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Matzahs, it's a mitzvah to eat matzah the Seder nights. There's some people who are allergic to wheat, and they have a problem with eating matzahs. Now, matzahs can be made out of the 5 types of grain, which are wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. They can be made out of any of these. Typically, they're made out of wheat, but it doesn't have to. So someone who is allergic to wheat and is not allergic to spelt, there are spelt matzahs available on the market. You can buy them. The hand matzahs, spelt, there may be a machine, the hand for sure, and they can use them. As a matter of fact, the matzahs are called lechem oni, the bread of poorness. So when you buy the spelt matzahs, you really get poor, because they cost 3 times as much as the regular matzahs. Now, some people can't have any gluten. They're allergic to the gluten. Now, the oat matzahs have very little gluten in them at all. And there are oat matzahs available in the market, too. Now, they, of course, the matzah kosher Pesach. And I have no question about the fact that they're kosher Pesach, but whether you could fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah with them is not agreed upon by everyone. And the reason for that is because oats, if you don't use them within 90 days after they've been harvested, they get rancid. And the only way to stop that is either to steam them or to put them into a heater that will kill the enzyme that causes it to get rancid. So they probably put it through the heater, because I don't think they want to put it into steam. And those are the oats which they would have to use for making the flour, and they make masses out of it. Now there's a little bit of a problem, and that is that the Prima Gadim, his name was Sefer, that he writes that you can, if the matzah is made out of rice, you cannot fulfill your obligation. Rice cannot become chametz. It's made out of corn, you cannot fulfill your obligation. Corn cannot become chametz. When you buy corn bread, some people don't like, they don't want wheat bread, they buy corn bread. So if it is really 100%, if most cornbread is 50% wheat, because if it's not, if there's no wheat in it, it won't rise, because corn doesn't rise. And if it's 100% cornbread, it's just like a pudding. It's like one piece. Because you may be able to put bicarbonate soda in to cause it to rise somewhat, but it's not really, it doesn't rise. You have to, the Torah says the shmat and it's a matzah, you should watch the matzah to make sure it doesn't become chametz. So the only type of matzah which is kosher according to Prima Gaudim is only if it's made from a type of flour which could become chametz, and you hurry up and make it in time before it has a chance to become chametz. But as I mentioned before, if you take flour and you put it into the oven, that it flour, and then you take it out of the oven and you make it into a dough and you make matzahs out of it, you cannot fulfill the obligation because it cannot become chametz. So the these oat matzahs, you know, there's the Nishman Sodom says that b'di'avad you could be yotza. So you should ask your rabbi if this is your question that has to do with you, whether what his advice is to you, whether you should use them or not. As I say, it is questionable. Matzah, which is made with juice, no water, apple juice, egg matzahs, grape matzahs, they may be kosher Pesach, but you cannot fulfill the obligation of eating matzah with these kind of matzahs. It's a significant, what I'm telling you is significant. Because while on the one side, there's a stringency over here that you cannot use them to be used as a matzah. That's according to everyone. There's no disagreement about that. Because the Torah says, lechem oni, it has to be a bread of poorness or affliction. And this is something which only rich people can afford to put juice into the matzah. So it's matzah ashira. It's called the matzah of rich people. So you cannot fulfill your obligation. You may be allowed to eat it on Pesach, which I'm going to get to in a minute, but you cannot fulfill your obligation. And because of that, on Erev Pesach, starting from the morning, starting from daybreak, you're not allowed. This is the day before Pesach. This would be your Monday this year. You're not allowed to eat matzah. On the day of before Pesach, you cannot eat matzah. But you're allowed to eat matzah which you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with. So that means that on Erev Pesach, you're allowed to eat egg matzahs, but you cannot eat regular matzahs. Now, most people, as a matter of fact, have the custom not to eat matzah ready from Rosh Chodesh. Some people have the custom not to eat matzah ready from Purim. But it's only a matzah which you could fulfill your obligation with on the Seder night. So therefore, this egg matzah or grape matzah, you're allowed to eat all the way through Erev Pesach, because you cannot fulfill the obligation. Similarly, if you take the matzah and you cook it, you cannot fulfill the obligation with it on the Seder night. So therefore, you're allowed to eat it at Erev Pesach. So therefore, if people eat gebracht and they want to make knedlach to be eaten in the soup on Erev Pesach, they can do that because you cannot, even though that it's made for matzah meal, you can, since you cannot fulfill your obligation on the Seder night with these knedlach because they're cooked, so you're allowed to eat them even on Erev Pesach. Someone has problem chewing the matzah, every time they chew the matzah, the teeth fall out. So then you actually can fulfill the obligation of eating matzah with matzah meal. You can take matzah meal and you can fulfill the obligation. But it hasn't been cooked. It's just matzahs which are ground up. Well, when you eat it, you also grind it up. So what difference if it was ground up before? If you grind up at the time you eat it, you can fulfill the obligation. Not only that, but if it is necessary, it's very hard to eat this dry matzah meal. If you have to add some cold water to it, you don't have to do that. You can't add any juice to it, but you can add cold water and eat it that way. However, if you do that, you will be eating more matzah than if you eat the regular matzah. and it's a simple why. Because when the amount you have to eat for the matzah, to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah, is a kazayas. A kazayas is something like the size of a golf ball. That's the how much you have to eat. Now, the matzah has air spaces in it. It's not something which is completely dense. There's air spaces in it. Those air spaces, which are supposed to be, which is the normal thing for doing a matzah, are part of this, included in the part of the size of the matzah. In other words, if you have the, you eat this amount of matzah, even though there's air spaces in it, it is included in it. But in matzah meal, there are no air spaces. So therefore, you have to eat the size of a golf ball of matzah meal. So you'll be eating more matzah, actually, than if you eat a real matzah. But that's just to fulfill the obligation. But the concept is that matzah has to be lechem oni. If it's matzah ashira, that means it's made with fruit juices, you cannot fulfill your obligation on the Seder night. Now, there's a question in general whether you can eat the matzah to begin with on Pesach with egg matzah. And even though that in former years there was, it used to say kosher for Passover on the egg matzahs, today I believe that all the companies that sell egg matzahs said that it's only good for the sick and for the elderly who cannot eat regular matzahs. Otherwise, we could treat them like chametz, not real chametz. The Sfaradim, those are the Jews that come from Spain, they, who started out in Spain, they actually do eat this matzah whole Pesach. For them it's kosher, but for those who come from the Northern Europe, Ashkenazim, they would not eat it on Pesach. But even though you can't eat it on Pesach, you're allowed to eat it on Erev Pesach as long as you can eat chametz. But real matzah you cannot eat on Erev Pesach at all. From daybreak on, you cannot eat regular matzah, but you're allowed to eat this matzah. Okay. Now,
how much matzah goes into a golf ball?
Okay. I measured it. It's not easy to measure it because when you break up the matzah, there's air spaces between the pieces of matzah which don't count. They don't count. Only air spaces that count are the air spaces that are in the matzah and are considered part of the matzah, that are completely surrounded with dough. So what I did was like this. I took matzahs and I sprayed them with a lacquer to make them waterproof. And then I displaced them in water to see how much water they would displace. And I don't want to confuse you with other opinions that say you should eat two kazesim for motzi matzah and for the afikoman. There are such opinions, but what came out is the following. If you're using machine matzahs, lechat chila, that means if under the good conditions, everything else is going fine, you should eat a half of a matzah to be two kazesim of a machine matzah, and a third of a matzah of a hand matzah. If that is too much, so then you'll be rely on the other opinions that say that one kazais is sufficient, and then you would eat a quarter of a matzah or a sixth of a quarter of a machine matzah or a sixth of a hand matzah. And your yotzeh, the mitzvah. Your yotzeh mitzvah. Now, someone has other problems eating matzah, they should consult a rav. There are certain leniences, maybe, that they can. You see, we eat the matzah at the beginning of the meal, and eat the matzah at the end of the meal. Like, if you can't eat both, which one should you do at the beginning or the end, or whatever? there's someone who should contact his rabbi which way to do it.
Aren't there varying sizes of matzahs and thickness that would make a difference?
Yes, it is true. In a hand matzah, there's no specific size. I used a thin matzah from Salem Papa, which is, I think, the thinnest matzahs on the market, which had a diameter of 10.5 inches, because they come also bigger sizes. So if you follow what I said, you'll for sure be yotzei. Now, a person can only fulfill... Yes?
With regards to the egg matzah, if you had it on Pesach, would you keep it in your house on Pesach?
You're allowed to keep it in your house on Pesach. If the Sfarim eat it, so then we can keep it in our house on Pesach, even though we're not Sfarim. And you never know, maybe someone will get sick and need it. Even though it's unusual. See, they're chocolate-covered matzahs. Now, the chocolate-covered matzahs are actually egg matzahs, which are covered with chocolate. If someone is very sick and he can't eat anything else, so then he can have a chocolate-covered matzah to keep him healthy.
Is Erev Pesach named after Chatzos?
What's that?
Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos?
You can do what?
Eat sheer matzah.
We don't eat it. Ashkenazim do not eat it. After the time, you cannot eat chametz anymore. That's even before chatzos. Okay. One other thing I want to mention about matzah, that if you bought matzah and you did not pay for them, there's a big question whether you can fulfill your obligation. It's not chametz, but whether you can fulfill your obligation of eating matzah it depends on the kind of arrangement you made with the one who you bought it from. If he said from the very beginning, you can pay me after Pesach, fine, then you did fulfill your obligation. But if he says, where's the money? And then you say, I don't have it with me, I'll give you tomorrow. And tomorrow he calls you and says, where's the money? And you say, I'll get it to you. And so you know that he's not happy about it. You actually cannot fulfill your obligation. Not because it's a mitzvah of Avera. It's a mitzvah that comes through an avera of not paying for it, which in itself may be a reason why you can't fulfill the mitzvah. But there's a special halacha that matzah has to belong to you in order to fulfill the obligation. And if it doesn't belong to you, then you don't fulfill the obligation of the mitzvah. Now, there's a big difference, though. If you didn't pay for it, let's say, when you buy an esrog, or the four types of... that you wave on sukkahs, if you don't own it, you don't fulfill your obligation. Now, if you didn't, you're supposed to pay and you forgot to pay, you didn't fulfill your obligation. Now, the question is, when it comes after sukkahs, do you have to pay? Because he sold you an esrog which you can fulfill your obligation with. So he sold you something that was worthless. So maybe you only have to pay 69 cents a pound for the esrog or whatever esrog would be worth on the market to eat. What you aren't allowed to do that, but the question is if you can come later and ask the money, since the person didn't fulfill his obligation. But by matzahs, that's not the question, because by matzahs, even if you can't fulfill your obligation of the mitzvah, but it's matzah and you ate it, and for that you bought something that has a value and you were able to use it. It's not as if it was an exercise of futility by eating the matzah. You ate matzah. So you have to pay anyway. But everyone, bottom line is, make sure you pay for your matzah before Pesach.
What happens if you don't forget to get the same?
Huh? Well, would you have invited people to the Seder?
Yeah.
If you invite people to the Seder, the understanding is that you're giving it to them for free. Is that right? Okay, so then it's his matzah. When he picks it up and starts chewing it, it's his. We're talking where he sold it and you didn't pay him. So the seller wants to get paid for it. He didn't agree to that you should buy matzah of him and not pay for it. Okay. Now, other things have to do with the preparations for Pesach is... the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. You have to check, make sure there's no chametz any place. Now, in former times, people didn't have houses like we have today. They had a cabin. There was one room. That room was the kitchen. That room was the dining room. It was the living room. It was the bedroom. It was the study. It was the playroom. It was the storage room. It was the den. It was just one room. I remember still they had beds that one side of the bed was attached with a hinge to the wall. And during the day, you picked up the bed and you there was a way out to fix it, it shouldn't fall down. And that was the end of the bedroom. You took your bed and put them against the wall. As a matter of fact, the Chacham Sofer speaks about these kind of beds because the husband and wife are using these kind of beds. They're actually attached by the wall. And the question is if that's considered they're attached or whatever. So that was a common thing. Do you remember that? You remember those beds? Okay, I guess it was a little bit history. So there was, so it was possible in those days to check your whole house in a couple of hours. Well, there was just one room. Now it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to check the churim tzedakim. You have to check all this, the cracks in the wall. You got to check them if there's any chumas there. Why would I have to check cracks in a wall? Who puts chumas in a crack in a wall? Okay, maybe children do. It is true. But in former times, like they had these log cabins, so each log was like a shelf to some degree, and people actually put things over there. Now it is true, if there's children in the house, every place has to be checked. There is no place that doesn't have to be checked. There was a story that happened in Baltimore that during the on Pesach, it was hot. Sometimes it gets hot, sometimes it gets cold. It snowed in Yerushalayim today. I remember Pesach when it snowed. I remember Pesach was hot. Sukkot also, sometimes Sukkot has snow, sometimes it gets hot. So it got hot. Someone went and put on the air conditioner. There was like a window unit. All of a sudden, a whole bunch of Cheerios pop out. So what happened? They had the high chair with the baby next to the air conditioning unit. And the tray they put these Cheerios. The baby went and just put them in the vent. So it came out. So there's no, if there's children around, there's no place that's safe that they didn't put any chumas. But today, besides all these are separate rooms, we have a basement, a second floor, an attic, bathrooms. And those, they had no bathrooms. They went to outhouses, public outhouses. We have storage closets, we have coat closets, foyers, pantries, break fronts, buffets, couches, office sometimes. Like we've got so many places that we have to check. It's impossible to do it all on Sunday night before Pesach. If you stay up the whole night, you won't get finished. So really, the responsibility to make sure that there's no chametz in the house is the responsibility of the one who owns the chametz, which is the master of the house, the man, if the woman's married. It's his responsibility to make sure the whole house is clean for Pesach. However, it seems that the women have accepted upon themselves the lion's share of the work, even though they're not really required to do that. And I'm not saying that the minig requires them to do that, but because it won't get done if they don't do it, so that's why they do it. At one time, I had lived in two places. I used to say shiur in the yeshiva, so I had a house on the yeshiva in Israel, which is out of Baltimore somewhat, and then since I had a shul, so I had a house in town also. So on Shabbos and Yontov I used to live in town, and during the rest of the week I lived in my house in the yeshiva campus. Now so it came time to clean for Pesach. We had two houses to clean. So my wife was very much work for her. So I said to her, look, we'll make a deal. I'll clean one house for Pesach and you clean the other house for Pesach. So she said, no, she doesn't trust me. And she was right. I mean, there's no way I would clean the house the way she cleans the house. one time my wife gave birth, and in former times they used to stay a week in the hospital when they had a baby. And so Erev Shabbos, a neighbor came and gave me a box as a present, a baby present. It was a box. It was about 16 inches by 16 inches and about 10 inches high. So I thanked them, and being the good husband that I wanted to be, even though I'm not sure that I did it properly, my wife will come home and she'll see you things lying around. So I went and took the box and put it in the closet. Closed closet. On the top there were other boxes, so I put it there. Okay, so then comes before Pesach, my wife all of a sudden gives a shriek. So I said, "What's the matter?" "There's a whole cake in this box, a big, big case." I didn't look at it. I thought it was a present. It came in such a fancy box. I thought it was some kind of present, a baby present. And so even though that this is, that's what I'm saying, my wife does a much better job than I do, that she would definitely check it out first before she put it away. But and besides that, there are other leniencies which it says in Yerushalmi the women have a custom to scrape down the walls. Because in those times the walls, chums could have been in them. It says, even though it's not a requirement, but anything that you do, the stringencies of Pesach, everything you do is a merit for them. You know, I think their supermarkets, I'm sure in Philadelphia, just there, like they are in every other city, and before Pesach, they have a Pesach section. They sell Passover food. During the year, they don't necessarily have a kosher section. But before Pesach, they have a special Passover section. Why is that? I spoke to a butcher in Baltimore. He says the people that eat tray for a whole year, before Pesach, they come in one and buy kosher for Pesach meat. So they only eat tray. You see people... So what is it? It seems that even though that people eat treif, but Pesach is something which is etched in their mind, and it has to be kosher Pesach. Well, why is that? The reason, I believe that the reason is because these people, when they were children, they saw their mothers or their grandmothers sweating away, working till late at night, cleaning getting the house ready for Pesach. And it left, that message stayed in their minds. They didn't see them sweating away to buy kosher meat. They didn't see that. They don't know where they bought the meat. It was a kosher home, so they probably bought kosher meat. But they saw them working so hard, they left this impression on them that till this very day, they know that eating kosher for Pesach is important. And they're doing it. I don't know how long it's going to last. Maybe it'll last another couple of generations, and after that it'll be around. And that's why it is so important that someone that can make Pesach at home, they should not go to a hotel for Pesach. Now, some people have no choice. They have they're too old to make Pesach themselves. They have no children to go to, or they don't want to go to their children. Or various reasons why a person may not be able to make Pesach by themselves, so they have to go to a hotel. But this way, the children lose out on this whole experience of knowing how important Pesach is to people. This way, it's you go to a hotel, so they give matzahs, they may give Chinese food. You know, they may give all kinds of food. It's not noticeable that there's such a difference from Pesach with any other yontif. So it's a very important chinuch for the children that they should know what Pesach is. Now, I want to say something. I may go a little bit on a tangent, but I think it's important over here to understand what you have to check for when you're checking the house for Pesach. that's understood that dust is not Pesach, is not hummus. Everyone knows that. But while you're cleaning for Pesach, you might as well take care of the dust also. But what are you really required to check for? What are we looking for? So the Mishnah starts at the beginning of Masechtos Pesach, and then on the night before Pesach, you have to check for the chametz. So the Mefarshim asks a question that why no one ever says you have to check the house to make sure there's no chazen in the house. Why? Because from Yid doesn't need chazen. Why should there be any chazen in the house? So why do you have to check for chametz? From Yid doesn't have any chametz in the house on Pesach. So Rashi says that the reason is because there's no issa in having chazen in the house, as long as you don't eat it, there's no problem. But if you have chametz in the house, then it's a transgression. There's an issa of bali roi or bali mosa, it says it should not be found or seen in your house. So therefore you have to check to make sure no one's going to eat it on pay. No from you is going to eat chametz, but you have to make sure you don't have it. So you shouldn't be even bali roi bali mosa. Tosa says, for various reasons, disagrees with Rashi, and says the reason is because chaza, you don't eat the whole year, so why should you come to eat it on Pesach? But chametz, you eat the whole year, and you're used to eating chametz without thinking you might come to eat it on Pesach, so therefore you have to check the house, make sure there's no chametz in the house. Now, the very big practical difference, what the reason is. According to Rashi, who says you shouldn't be over by Rabbi Matze, the only time that you're over by Rabbi Matze is if there is a kazayas. As I said before, the size of a golf ball of chametz. But if it's less than that, then you're allowed to have it in your house. Tosus says that, according to Tosus, he said you might come to eat it. You're not allowed to eat even less than a half a kazayas. Even less than a zayas, you're not allowed to eat. You're allowed to eat a little bit of chaza. So therefore, even if it's less than a kazayas, according to Tosus, you have to remove it from your house. Now, according to Tosafot, it says we can come to eat it if it's in a place that you wouldn't eat it because it has deteriorated or it's in a dirty place that no regular person would eat it, you can leave it there. Even if it's more than a kazayis, because they're not owned by your own matzah, because you are mabat l'chametz, you said any chametz is my possession, should be insignificant and considered like the dirt in the street, and it's ownerless. So there's no bayir of bayir matzah. So, but if you wouldn't come to eat it, you can have it. According to Rashi, if it is more than, even if it's the place where you wouldn't come to eat it, as long as hasn't deteriorated that much that even a dog wouldn't eat it, then you are over bayir of bayir matzah, and therefore, if you weren't mevatel, and therefore you have to get rid of it. Bottom line. That if we are machmer for both of these opinions, so therefore, if chametz is less than a kazayas and a place where you would not come to eat it, then you can leave it there. Which means that let's say you have an armchair and there is between the back of the seat and the lean, there may be some crumbs over there. You can leave it there. You don't have to go and get rid of it because it's less than a kazayas and it's in a place where you wouldn't come to eat it. Because even if it would come out, you wouldn't eat it. It's dirty. Now, if you have in your car, in the back seat, or maybe sometimes even in the front seat, if they're between the seat and the lean, you may have a kazayas over there. Especially if you have children, you know, you may have a whole cookie over there. But if that's not the case, if all you may have is crumbs, you can leave it there and you don't have to do anything about it. That's what I said. My wife doesn't trust me to check for hummus because I would leave all that stuff there and she wouldn't. Yeah.
Is there a chatzis shir by
Valyra
Valimotse?
There's no din of chatzis shir by Valyra Valimotse. The Shaka Saria says that because not chazal is terufi. For whatever reason. Okay. So. But there's one exception to this rule. It's not an exception, it's part of the rule. That if it's in a place where you may come to eat it, then even if it's less than a kazayas, you have to get rid of it. So when you're talking about a fork, somehow between the prongs, there may be some food that's left there, even if it's less than a kazayas. But next time you're going to use this fork, even though it's not a Pesach-like fork, it's a Chametz-like fork, and you have different ones for Pesach, it doesn't matter. Since this isn't a place where a person could come to eat it, you have to make sure that it's clean. Certainly the plates and the pots, they have to be clean. Now, if you're worried about how you're going to clean this, you have fish forks and meat forks and entree forks and this kind of forks and other forks, you've got 50 forks. Are you going to check each one? Well, either yes, you'll check each one, or there's something else you can do. We have a rule that chametz is not fit to be eaten by a dog. You're allowed to have on Pesach. So therefore, let's say you have shoe polish. Maybe if it has chametz in it, it doesn't matter. A dog wouldn't eat shoe polish, and you're allowed to have it on Pesach. You're allowed to use it on Pesach. Or ink that is made, let's say, with alcohol. Some of them have alcohol in them, so they should dry faster. Even if the alcohol is grain alcohol, but once you put the ingredients in it to make ink, no dog's going to eat it. And therefore, you're allowed to use it on Pesach. So if you want, you take all your forks and you take a bowl and you put some bleach in it, in the water. And you take all your forks and you put them into this bleach water and let it sit there for a while. No one, it's not fit to be eaten by a dog anymore. And even if this chametz there, there's no problem. Now, of course, you want to kasher this, you have to make sure it's completely clean. That's not it's no way. But you can do this in order to make anything made not fit to be eaten by a dog, or you can spray, let's say you have the garbage. You may have a problem with the garbage. At the last minute, Erev Pesach, you throw all the rest of the bread that you have, you throw it in the garbage. Well, it's still in your garbage cans, so it's still in your property, but if you want to spray it with insecticide, so then it's not fit to be eaten by a dog, and then it's not considered as if you have chametz.
Should you have to sell your chametz?
Pardon?
If you sell your chametz, don't you sell the chametz on the somewhere in the
if the guy wants to buy it.
Can they see when they sell it?
Maybe. Okay. Now, and because of this rule, there's a custom, a Jewish custom, that if any food falls on the floor on Pesach, that you don't eat it unless you wash it off. And if it's not washable, let's say it's a piece of matzah, so you don't eat it till after Pesach. Because you don't have to check between the floorboards to see if there's any chametz there. You're not required to do that. There's no kazayas. There's no way. It's just maybe crumbs. So therefore, since you're not required to get rid of it, if something falls on the floor, maybe touch some crumbs on the floor. So therefore, we don't eat it unless you wash it off, or you leave it after Pesach. Okay. Now I'm it's getting late already, so I'm going to. It's only 20 after 8. So it's at the clock over there. Okay, so I'm not going to talk about kashering, but I will say that before I ask for your questions, I do think that it is important to know that there are certain places, say, chametz in a fish tank. So you feed the fish chametz. So that fish is fit to be eaten by a dog because the fish will eat it. So you have to clean it out. You have to clean out the fish tank before Pesach. Now, what do you give fish to eat on Pesach? You can't give them regular fish food because it has chametz in it. And you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. And if you're a fish eating it, you're deriving benefit from it. So either you give him matzah meal or you give him worms. Don't give him matzah meal. Otherwise, there's going to be a levaya on Pesach. they won't survive the matzah meal. Worms is good. They're not kosher, but they're kosher Pesach. The fish are allowed to eat worms. The So there are places where you actually have to be concerned. Wherever it is, something where it could, may come to be eaten, you should the pockets of the of your clothing. If you know you never put food in them, you don't have to bother to check them. If you may sometimes put food in them, so on Pesach there may be some crumbs there, and on Pesach you also may put food in there, and the crumb might stick to it. So you do have to check it, especially for the children. But otherwise, if it's in a place where you wouldn't come to eat it, so it's less like his eyes, there's no problem. Now, are there any questions?
During Pesach, is a heifer sufficient to permit eating matzah at the same table where a boy is eating chametz? Or is it not?
As long as you can feel sure that nothing's going to get mixed, nothing's going to touch each other, you can do it on Pesach too. It's his responsibility, yes.
What is that for my son if my wife is hurt? He should be checking.
No. If she is a tzedekas, a righteous woman, and wants to do it for him, that's fine. That's a very good way to promote the Shalom Bayis. But if she says, she has the right to say, it's your duty and you take care of it, I'm going to sleep.
Can you talk a little bit more about comments that might be left on comments to utensils?
Okay. Also, I'll say if you have, let's say, disposable aluminum pans, it's very hard to clean them. Most people throw them out, but sometimes they don't throw them out. So you can't, they have to be cleaned. Now, all the baking equipment has to be cleaned. The baking equipment is not so easy to clean. As a matter of fact, in my house, it's my job, since I said, I opened up my mouth and I said it's man's responsibility. So my wife says, okay, take them. And I take a blowtorch and I burn them off. It's much faster. It goes like in 5 minutes, the whole thing's clean. If you could stay there with steel wool and rub it and scrub it, it could take an hour, it could take 2 hours until you get it completely clean. Especially those that have a curled lip over the top, and the chametz gets in there, there's no way you can get it out. So we don't use them for Pesach, but in order to clean them, it's the most effective way to clean it. You could sell them, but the only way you can sell these utensils is if you really sell some chametz with it. And this is the catch. There are some people that don't sell real chametz. Your Noah's bread, cookies, noodles, they don't sell that. They sell ketchup and vinegar and things that may have some chametz in it, but they don't sell real chametz. So when the Rav sells the chametz, and here's another point which is really important to remember. If you're not going to be in Philadelphia on Pesach, let's say you're going to Eretz Yisrael. So you go to your Rav and you say, can you sell my chametz to me? So he says, fine. You have to tell him that you're not going to be in Philadelphia, because he can't sell it the time that he normally sells it. He normally would sell it Monday morning around 10 o'clock, because people are still eating chametz. So he doesn't want to cause people to steal from the guy if he would sell it Sunday night. So then he's causing people to steal from the guy, belongs to the guy. So he probably sells in the morning. But if you're going to Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, Pesach is 6 hours earlier than it is. Since we changed the clock, it's only 6 hours. It's usually 7 hours. 6 hours earlier. So when it comes to 5 hours on the day on over there, which over here is... by the time he sells it, you can't sell it anymore. So you have to tell him that. Now, if you're going to Los Angeles for Pesach, you have to tell him that too, because when he buys back the chametz, it's 3 hours later over there. I mean, it's 3 hours really earlier, but Pesach is over 3 hours later than it is over here. So he buys it back right away. You have the chametz on Pesach. So it's important that you tell him. But getting back to the question that you asked, if you only sell the goy all the chametz that's stuck on your pans and on your cutlery and things like that. Now, which guy in his right mind is going to pay anything for that? You have to pay for it, and it's not worth anything. It has absolutely no value. So the one of the ways that he owns it is by paying for it, but that can't pay for something that has no value. So therefore, that shouldn't be the only thing you sell. If you sell something else which could have chametz in it, so then it's a deal. You buy my vinegar, but only if you buy the chametz that's stuck onto my pot. So then you could do that. But if you only sell that, not so simple that it helps.
But you said the chametz, the little pieces that are left, is not really, and it's not right to eat anyway.
It is right to eat because it comes in contact with the food that you will eat. You see, that's why it's different than if it's in a place where it is dirty or something.
Do you then have a fee of tefillah on that?
Well, normally you don't. That's another thing. You could sell the pot, which normally they don't do that. The rabbi doesn't do that. He doesn't sell the pot, so you shouldn't have to put it into the mikveh again. He just sells the chametz on the pot, and that's why you don't have to tell them.
Paste, mouthwash, body soap, and soap that's used on pots and pans, kosher for Pesach, or
the soap which you use on, you're talking about detergent, right?
No, like soap that you use on like pots and pans. Dish soap.
No, about dish soap or dish detergent?
Dish soap.
Okay. As far as I know, all the dish soap that is kosher during the year is kosher for Pesach. There's Geffen makes it, or so. Rokeach makes it. It's kosher. They're all kosher for Pesach. Soap typically is made from animal fat. You know that. The Dial soap is made by the... By a slaughterhouse that they use the fat, and they use the fat to make the soap with. So that's why you need kosher soap. Detergents are synthetic, and they don't have any animal fat in them in general. They may have something homestick in them, but there's plenty available. The Comet and the Ajax. Their scoring powders have no chametz in them, and the dish soap, they're plenty available on the market which don't have any chametz in them.
What about toothpaste and
mouthwash? Now, the Crest toothpaste actually has wheat derivatives in them. I wouldn't recommend them, even though that technically it's not fit to be eaten by a dog. And anything that's not fit to be eaten by a dog, there's no isabai rabai matzeh on it. You're not allowed to eat it, but you don't intend to eat the toothpaste. So from a straight halacha point of view, it would be permitted, but the minig is to get kosher Pesach, everything kosher Pesach. Everything. Are you married? Okay, ask your wife.
How about medications that you don't chew? Just pills that you swallow that are not chewed?
Now, when it comes to medicines, the various kosher organizations have put out lists of kosher medicines and not kosher medicines. I must say that no one should refrain from taking a medicine without first, even if it's not on the list, without first consulting their doctor and their rabbi. And even though, let's say, someone has high blood pressure. So there's a high blood pressure medicine on the list that is kosher Pesach. The one he's taking is not kosher Pesach. Not so simple. You can just change from one to the other. You should never do that. It's dangerous. And the person should not refrain from taking any medicine that you need without first consulting the doctor and Rav. The doctor to find out if it's crucial that he takes the medicine, and the Rav, if he says it is crucial, whether this is something would be permitted, even if it is chametz, or maybe the Rav can find out from various sources that it doesn't have any chametz, and then you could take it.
On the
let's stop it. If there is a medicine that is not made in a kosher variation and is absolutely necessary for the existence of the person, what do they do as far as the kosher of their home and if they're guests in somebody else's home? And
okay. Now, the kashrus of the pill. Now, you're talking now in general, not Pesach, right? Anytime.
I'm talking specifically Pesach, but also in general.
Okay. The rule is like this. Any medicine which is, if a person wouldn't take it, they may be putting their life in danger. You're allowed to take at any time, even on Yom Kippur if it's necessary.
Understood.
Okay. The most medicines are, if they're pills or capsules, they don't compromise the kashrus of the home, even if they're treif. Now you're talking about a liquid medicine. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about pills and capsules.
Okay, so there's no question. If they have to take a liquid medicine, let's say you need a tablespoon of this medicine, and it's a treif of medicine, and you have a spoon, which is a kosher spoon, and the question is, what should you do? The best thing would be if you could use a plastic spoon, or you just dedicate one spoon for this and don't use it for kosher. But technically speaking, it may even be considered kosher as long as you don't wash it off with hot water, and there may be a way out. But the best thing is to use a disposable spoon, or segregate one spoon just for use of this medicine. That's only if it is a liquid. If it's a solid, there's no problems. You heard me correctly, but I don't know if everyone would agree with that. You see, the ones that are careful about Gebrauch think is a Chumrah, but there's the other side of the coin that the other people say that it is a Kula. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is that a person shouldn't think that this year is going to be Frum and he's not going to eat Gebrauch. Because it's not, if his custom is that he does eat Gebrauch, so then it's not necessarily a good thing to change that custom. There's two ways of looking at it. As a matter of fact, I once spoke to Moshe Feinstein, and I asked him if someone has a custom not to eat Gebrauch, and he wants to change now to eat Gebrauch, whether he has to be Mataneda. He had a custom, he had a custom to eat Gebrauch, and he wants to change not Gebrauch if he has to be Mataneda, based on this. Because if you have a custom to eat Gebrauch, so it's a Chumrah, in a sense. So maybe if you want to change now to not eat Gebrauch, so you may have to Mataneda. So this is not a usual thing that a person wants to change from not eating Gebrauch to eat Gebrauch. People usually tend to go to the right. And so he thought I was asking him that if someone has a minig to eat Gebrauch, now he wants to not eat Gebrauch. If he wants to know if he wants to do that. He got all upset with me. What? There's no such thing as not eating Gebrauch, he said. All the Gedolei Yisrael, all ate Gebrauch. They said our matzahs, our thin matzahs, there's absolutely no problem with them. And he really was upset with me that I asked such a question. I said, no, I asked the question the other way. He said, oh, that, he was so relieved that he didn't have any willpower to even answer that question. Okay. All right. I'm sorry, but okay, that's very easy to answer that question. Regular matzah, as I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned it. If you take flour and water and let it sit for 18 minutes, it'll become chametz. You mix it, right? Now, there is, when they make these machine matzahs, they mix the flour and the water. The flour, after it's mixed, it goes between rollers and it makes it like into a long piece of dough. So the rollers make it into, flatten it out, then it goes to another set of rollers, make it even thinner. The third set of rollers make it even thinner. Then there's a machine that makes the holes in the matzahs. And then there's a machine that cuts up the matzahs to the size, because this piece of dough is about this wide. And it's as long as it keeps on going, you know, it just keeps on going. And then it goes into the oven. Now, the oven is usually about 200 feet long, and it's on a moving belt. Everybody goes in, and by the time it comes out, they're finished, baked. In 18-minute matzahs, they stop the machines every 18 minutes and clean out the machine. They don't have to clean out the oven, because whatever would be there would be get burnt. But they clean out everything. The time the water hits the flour, comes to dough all the way until it goes to the oven. They clean it every 18 minutes, and then they start again. So there no chametz. No, there couldn't be any chametz, because you stop at 18 minutes, and so everything goes without any question. On the regular matzahs, it doesn't stop. It goes a whole day. Because there's no the dough that's formed, by the time it's formed until it goes into the oven, maybe takes 8 minutes, 9 minutes. And so any dough that's formed is never standing around for 18 minutes. The only thing is that maybe on the machine there are some pieces of dough which will be on from 10 minutes ago, and now they're going to go on this and get stuck in this dough. And they will eventually make a chametz. So that's why the people who make every 18 minutes stop it, they worry about that. But the truth is that today, the machines are Teflon coated, and they don't accept nothing sticks to it, and they have different ways of doing it that they're pretty foolproof that there's very little dough that gets stuck on it. And even if there will be a little bit of dough, it'll be bottle nutrition before Pesach. I don't want to trouble you with all the details, but that's the difference. The difference is, do they clean the machines every 18 minutes or not? Shmura matzah has to do with something completely different. Shmura matzah means that they have watched this wheat from the time that it was harvested all the way until they made it into a dough. From the time that the grinding, everything has been checked. In the not shmura matzah, they check the wheat kernels to make sure that they haven't sprouted already till now. They may kind of sprout even while they're growing. If you cut them, you cut the wheat, once it grows to a certain extent, afterwards there's no sap coming up from the ground anymore. They doesn't need it. And at that point, if it rains, it actually could become chametz while it's still attached to the ground. So they check the wheat kernels. They don't check all of them. They check samples to make sure that there's not a type of wheat that has sprouted. And they make matzahs from it. Shmura is a hiddur which is especially important to have for matzah that use at the Seder, as I explained before. Right.
Should we do brittle today? We don't have to worry about that?
No, actually, if it would be that way, if it's loose chametz, you do have to worry about it. But if it's stuck somewhere, let's say between the floorboards, and if you sweep it up, it won't get stuck, it won't amass to a kazayas together, so we're not worried about it. And that's what it is most of the time.
You're not worried if the shita stays that you make them to eat. You're just worried that.
If it's on the floor, we're not worried you come to eat it. We're only worried
right.
that maybe.
So you're only worried that you're just going to have
a kazayas. This is a rabbinic discussion which we're having over here. Bittel doesn't help midrabbanan. It only helps midrais. Someone's mavatel has to be bodek anyway.
So this is less rabbinic. If that's the case, then Shulchan Aruch says they're in different rooms, so you don't have to be worried that they'll be put all together.
All right.
So, but today, somebody asked me this question, that today that you have vacuum cleaners, and you take the vacuum room to room, you have to be concerned that all that chametz.
It has to touch each other in order to be considered kazayis.
And if it's with
dust, it wouldn't be that good. Okay. One last question.
This is definitely not an issue for that question. If I
Okay. Why is this not a rabbinic question? Okay, so let me give the background to this question. The question is, on Pesach night, we don't eat any roasted meat. Because it should not be confused with the Korban Pesach, which had to be roasted. So we don't eat any roasted meat. The custom is like this. If you roast in a roasting pan and you put even a quarter of an inch of water in the bottom of it, it is not considered roasted for these purposes, considered cooked. But so if you pour this juice over it, whatever it is, and it ends up to be a quarter inch or more on the bottom of the pan, you can, and you put it from the very beginning, right? Then it's permitted. Otherwise, it would not be permitted. Okay, I want to thank everyone for coming to listen to me, and I want to wish you all a kashrut and happy Pesach.
I want to thank everyone for coming. Just so you should know, just in sponsorships tonight, we raised over $35,000 for Ezel Chinuch, which, by the way, is more than twice what we raised at last year's lecture, so hopefully next year we will raise over 70. And for those people who sponsored on here, who I promise a safer to, I have a Haggadah with the commentary of the Dubna Magid, which I'll give you afterwards. And again, I'd like to thank Rabbi Heinemann for coming and helping us.
We'd just like to arrange a minyan for Mara. Before we do that, I just want to call your attention to the papers that are found around the room. We have four different lectures, two for women specifically, and two others. Please take note of these. They're coming up within this coming week and the week after, so please take note. Do we have a minyan of people here that would like to daven Mara? Please raise your hand.